Hello, friends, and welcome to Fresno EOC's Poverty Fighters Podcast. My name is Antonio Aguilar Jr., and I am the host of the Poverty Fighters Podcast, and we are back with another episode. In today's episode, I sit down with my great friend and colleague, Mr. Kevin Williams. If you've been listening to previous podcast episodes, you may remember Kevin. He is the manager of equity and inclusion at Fresno EOC. With the Veterans Day holiday being on November 11th, we thought this was a great opportunity for us to sit and chat about our veterans and really talk about some of the injustices and inequities that they're still facing today. Had a great time chatting with Kevin. I hope you all enjoyed the episode. Without further ado, here is Kevin Williams. Kevin, welcome. How's it going?
Not too bad. Not too bad at all, man. Just enjoying the week so far and looking forward to the holidays coming up in the next couple months, this month and next month. So, yeah.
Yeah. Lots of holidays coming up. Feels good to be in our new office too, huh?
That it does. I mean, we're people still moving in, but you know, I think it definitely feels good to be in the space and kind of make it our own and, you know, feel like a department.
Right. I definitely agree there. Well, thank you for taking the time to sit and chat with me. You know, we had discussed doing this podcast as Veterans Day. As many of you know, Veterans Day is celebrated on November 11th. Here in the United States, and really just a day where we can honor all of our military veterans, you know, all those that have served in the United States Armed Forces. You know, Kevin and I thought it was important to have a podcast to talk a little bit about our veterans. You know, we have a few veterans in our agency, Kevin, not sure if you knew. I'm sure we have many. I know Patrick Turner for sure. Also, Thomas from Transit is a veteran, and so it was definitely important, you know, for us to do a podcast and to remember those that have served and honor those. And you know, there's one thing that, you know, that is not talked about often, and there's still a lot of disparities within the veteran community, you know, and inequalities. And you know, I think you're the perfect person to help us talk about that a little bit. And so I know you had some things that you wanted to share with us.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I think, like you were talking about, we talked about this podcast, and I thought it was really important it's always important to know why you're celebrating a holiday, right? And, you know, I think sometimes people, you know, we talked about this previously, right? You know, mm-hmm. Veterans Day and Memorial Day, and, right. You know, what does that actually mean? People just, oh, I get the day off. It's like, no, let's actually think about, you know, what it's about. And like what we're supposed to be recognizing with the day. Right. And, you know, I also thought about it in terms of EOC. You know, we have, like you said, we do have some veterans that work here. And also how does that relate to like the mission of what we're doing, right? And fighting and addressing poverty. And so like, I thought, you know, this was a perfect opportunity to highlight some of those things that, you know, really affect veterans in terms of poverty. Mm-hmm. Well, most people might not know this, but veterans are 50% more likely to be homeless than, you know, the general populace of the United States. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a big number, especially because so much of our language is around, you know, as it should be, right, around supporting troops, mm-hmm. and supporting people who put their lives on the line for our freedom, but then they come home and they're more likely to be homeless. Like,
right.
That's a hard pill to swallow.
No, definitely. And, you know, it seems like, I agree, you know, it really ties to our mission in fighting poverty. But when it comes to veteran, it seems like there's still that lack of the support, right? You know, still the poor living conditions and whatnot. And there's definitely a lot of great agencies out there doing things to help these veterans, but it seems like it's almost not enough.
Yeah. I mean, and when you think about like the resources we have, if you can get access to them, great, right? But that's a big if. Right. And so what do you do in the meantime when you're waiting? What do you do, you know, because the truth of the matter is like, you know, going to war and fighting these wars that we build connections through our social networks, man. Mm-hmm. And that's how we get connected with jobs. Like you said, you know, it's not what you know, it's who you know. Right. Well, if you've been in war and you've been, you know, and you've been out deployed for 5-10 years, who do you know? Mm-hmm. That's and so like that re-entry thing is really, really difficult. Not to mention, you know, consistent talk about access to mental health services. When you, regardless of you know how strong you are as a person, being on a battlefield, being in that space, man, that does something to your mental health, right? Right. Having to deal with the idea of taking life messes with your mental health.
Mm-hmm.
And so how are we, you know, investing in people in a way that that kind of mitigates that? And if we're not doing it for the general populace, man, then, you know, we definitely aren't doing enough for veterans.
Right. Yeah. And I'm glad you brought up the mental health, because that's definitely a huge piece of, you know, these veterans coming home. You know, I hear stories of, you know, these veterans, you know, suffering from PTSD and, you know, other mental health issues, and they can't sleep at night. And oftentimes they're just medicated. Right. But I mean, how are we going to expect them to work and earn a living when they're not sleeping or they're taking all these medications? Right. So it's just all these things piled up on top of each other that I'm sure is adding to this homeless crisis that we're seeing within the veterans.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and then, you know, from a logistical standpoint, from a philosophical standpoint, as far as an organization, like, mm-hmm. you know, we spend the last 2 months, you and Yen, right, just going mm-hmm. through and talking about, like, what does it mean to be in poverty?
Right.
And what do we as an organization define as poverty? How do we unpack some of the things that are thought about people in poverty?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And as I'm talking about that, right, I'm thinking about, you know, how many people we drive by on the side of the road who are looking for housing that mm-hmm. are veterans. Right. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when we're having these conversations about, you know, who didn't work hard enough, or, you know, who, you know, need to pick themselves up by their bootstraps, like, these people, mm-hmm. you know, fought, you know, so that we could go to work, and we're driving past them, you know, wondering why they, you know, haven't done enough.
Mm-hmm.
That's really something to unpack. Like, so many of them don't have the resources, and they've put their lives on the line to make sure that we have the mm-hmm. resources.
And, you know, something else that's interesting to think about, you know, when you talk in context of poverty and race, right? I know you had shared some statistics that, you know, a lot of these veterans that are homeless, you know, that are struggling, tend to be African American or Hispanic American or Latino, right?
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. They actually, 96% of homeless veterans, are single males from poor and disadvantaged communities. 96%.
Wow.
And when you look at, you know, the demographics and disparities, we know who that is and what that looks like.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's, again, like, no matter where you are, no matter what you do, right, there's this pattern where being Black and brown means you're going to be at risk more of homelessness, of not having access, than your white counterparts.
Mm-hmm.
And that's even, you know, clearly in the military, you know, that's true for the armed forces as well. And that's historical.
Right. And I know there, like I said, there's lots of services and, you know, resources available. You know, I know you had mentioned the GI Bill, right? The Servicemen's Readjustment Act of 1944. Can you talk to us a little bit about that GI Bill and, you know, how it was created and meant to help these veterans?
Yeah, absolutely. So, but I just also wanted to note from the previous comment, 56%. Of mm-hmm. the homeless population, homeless veterans, of all homeless veterans are African American and Latino.
Right.
56%. Even though they're, you know, African Americans count for 12.8% of the population, and Latinos, Hispanics account for 15.4% of the population. Right. So that's what we mean when we're talking about disparities.
Right.
So I just wanted to make sure I highlighted that. And so the GI Bill is actually initially, you know, the real name for it is the Servicemen's Readjustment Act of 1944.
Mm-hmm.
And the purpose of that was just the thing that we're talking about. Like, when vets go to war and they come back, right, they're, you know, they're not equipped for the, you know, to get a job. They're not equipped to find housing because of that disconnect from society from being in war. And so what this bill was, the purpose of this bill was to provide low-cost mortgages, low-interest loans for businesses and for schooling. And it is 1 year, also 1 year of unemployment compensation to dedicate it to the payments of tuition and living expenses so that these GIs, so these veterans would have an opportunity to get back on their feet, right? Mm-hmm. To be able to establish themselves in society. Right. And so on the premise that you know, we talk about what do people need to achieve? They need that investment, right? They need those, you know, I need to be able to have a house. I need to be able to have education, and I need to know that my needs will be taken care of while I'm getting that education to be successful. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's as you, unfortunately, which is not surprising, in 1944, you know, Jim Crow was still a thing. Segregation was still a thing. Right. And so the way that this bill was allocated wasn't equitable at all. And so what happens is then you have this bill which has so much potential to do great things, and you know the federal government left it to the states to determine who has access. Mm-hmm. And so when you leave it to the states, you know, well then, you know, those states that have Jim Crow law, those states that have segregation on the books, then they can decide we're not going to give it to Black and brown people.
Wow.
And so I also want to say that while it's easier, it's very easy to say that this is a Southern problem. This is also a problem in the North, and it was just as bad. Mm-hmm. And so just overall, 7.8 million veterans were able to use the GI Bill to get education benefits, with 2.2 attending college and 5.6 attending some kind of vocational training program. Mm-hmm. 7.8 million veterans.
Wow.
But obviously that wasn't, you know, that was not equitably balanced out. So going back to talking about like how this wasn't just a Southern problem, mm-hmm. The GI Bill insured over 67,000 mortgages in New York and New Jersey. 67,000 mortgages. 0.15% of those went to people that were Black and brown.
Oh, wow.
Not even a full percent. 0.15%.
Yeah.
Went to Black and brown community.
And that's where we see those inequities, right? Like, yeah, I mean, you think this bill is created, it's doing so many great things, but then when you really look at the numbers, I mean, who is it really helping, right?
Yeah, right. That becomes the question. I mean, when we look at the outcomes of the bill, right. Mm-hmm. You know, the bill funded the education of 22,000 dentists, 67,000 doctors, 91,000 scientists, 238,000 teachers, 240,000 accountants, 450,000 engineers. Wow. How much money is that? Right. How much opportunity and advantage is that?
Mm-hmm.
Think about how good that is for people who are able to access it. So clearly it worked. Right, but who did it work for, and who didn't it work for?
Right, right. Yeah, it's like you can go serve our military, but you can't come back and access these benefits.
Right, right. And then you know what? And then I'll even add to that, right? This because you know when we talk about systems of oppression, it's not just one thing. Mm-hmm. It's a multi-layered thing, and so one of the reasons that you know. Some people couldn't access the GI Bill was because the GI Bill was only offered to people who had an honorable discharge.
Mm.
Right. And so thinking about that, right, if you got a dishonorable discharge, then you weren't able to access the GI Bill either.
Right.
But in the time of segregation and Jim Crow, who do you think was getting dishonorable discharges?
Mm.
So if you stood up for yourself and said, you know, what you're doing is racist, right? Mm-hmm. Then you get a dishonorable discharge and you don't have access to any of these, to the GI Bill. You don't have access to any of these benefits. And then people who took the abuse got home and still didn't have access to any of it, right? And so like mm-hmm. that is trauma in its own. Right. And then mm-hmm. imagine how their kids and their grandkids feel. Right. My grandfather fought for this country. You know, he put his life on the line and he came back and he couldn't even get a house.
Right.
He couldn't get an education. Right. He had to go back and work for less than he's valued.
Right.
That's hard. And then even till today, there's still not language around racism and discrimination in military law. So even if you complain and you know, said like, you know, I want to press charges for what?
Mm-hmm.
There's still no language that protects you from that type of discrimination. So, you know, even complaining about it probably would lead to a dishonorable discharge, mm-hmm. right? And, you know, kind of, you know, make you inaccessible for all of these supports that you're supposed to have.
Right. And again, I just think it's something that is not talked about as often as it should be, right? We talk about poverty, we talk about racism, and you know, of course, we definitely want to honor our veterans and appreciate everything that they do, but we can't turn a blind eye to these things that are happening, right? And to our veterans that are living in poverty and dealing with racism and these inequities. And so, you know, I'm very happy that you decided to take the time to share this with us, because, you know, again, I think it's important information for everybody to know, and especially on a day like Veterans Day, where we want to honor our veterans. You know, again, we want people to know what's happening.
Right. Absolutely. And, you know, how can we make that part of the conversation outside of Thursday, aside of the one day, you know, Veterans Day? You know, how can we do a little bit more than taking them to every restaurant and getting them a free beer? You know, I feel like, you know, you do a little bit more than that, you know, and how do we, you know, begin to make sure that we aren't mirroring the same practices and same mistakes? Because, you know, now the approximately 43% of the 1.3 million people on active duty in the United States are people of color. So it's getting close to about 50%.
Right.
And so if we look at the data that we're looking at, right, in terms of the rate of homelessness and who's homeless and which veterans don't have access, we're creating homelessness.
Right.
When we don't support veterans. And we're creating this poverty, right? We're creating this the mental health struggle. Because imagine, you know, the mental health struggles that come with being you know, in the armed forces and serving,
right?
Multiplied by the mental health crisis that comes when you don't have food, when you don't have shelter, when you don't have the resources, when you don't have employment. Right. Multiplied by the people that you fought for calling you a bum.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, it's we really have to, again, I think, stop thinking in terms of words and humanize the experience that veterans have, and push ourselves to demand better for them, really, and call ourselves accountable to be better for them.
Yeah, you know, saying thank you for your service and giving them one day is not enough, you know. And as poverty fighters, and, you know, our mission to continue to fight poverty, you know, it starts with us. And like you said, I think there's definitely more that we can do, and at least get the conversation rolling, you know, on the type of changes that we can make to provide help to these veterans.
Absolutely. You know, and I think, you know, also, you know, being, as you know, this, you know, being originally from New York, you know, this really, you know, this thing strikes home for me too, because, you know, how much legislation do we have around getting, you know, health support for first responders after 9/11? And how many of them died waiting for that support that they didn't get?
Right.
You know, people running in and inhaling those fumes and getting all different kinds of cancers and lung disease for being heroic. Right. And we talk about, you know, how heroic they are and what they do, and how much what they do makes our society possible.
Right, right.
But no. Then when it's time to do something for them, we have to have a lot of conversation, legislation, as if, you know, they haven't more than earned their right to have healthcare, their right to have housing, their right to have access to employment.
No, you're right. I agree 100%. I mean, even with the pandemic, right? We had the National Guard out there, you know, being, you know, delivering, you know, PPE and the vaccines, and you know, again, they're the first ones when we're in a state of crisis to be out there defending us, helping us, and it seems like we're not returning the favor when they're in need.
Right. Exactly. You know, and a friend of mine not too long ago. Said to me, and I told him that I was preparing to really, that I was really thinking about, you know, having this podcast, doing this podcast with you, really talking about the GI Bill Veterans Day and how much we're not really supporting our vets the way we think we are or the way we should. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what he said to me is he said, you know, imagine if the US was threatened. Imagine if our democracy was at stake. Mm-hmm. And the armed forces just said, no, we're not going to help. Right. And I was like, they would be justified. Mm-hmm. They would be justified in saying, you know, when I do this, I'm ending my social life. Even if I come back alive, I'm not going to have access to the things I need.
Right.
And they just said, no. Right. You know, they fight battles that we think should be fought. Mm-hmm. Right. And then, you know, we give them a beer once a year.
Yeah, it's a tough pill to swallow when you think of it in those terms, huh? And again, they do so much for us, putting their lives on their line. And yeah, I say thank you for your service, you know, for those that I know. But again, it's our words are definitely not enough.
Yeah. No, you know, and it's interesting too, and a lot of people don't know this also, you know, Martin Luther King talked about this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is, you know, in his last year of life, you know, this was a big topic for him. And even back then, people were really, really angry at him for speaking on it. Mm-hmm. Actually referred to him as being un-American. You know, in the last year of MLK's life, he was, I think only 30 or 40% of the population saw him favorably. So most people despised him, mm-hmm. right? And that was a large part, not just because of, you know, him talking about segregation, but also, you know, him acknowledging that, you know, soldiers are coming back from Vietnam and they can't even sit at the same table together, right? Wow. They don't have the same access to things, right? Yeah. That, you know, we're, you know, sending poor kids, right? Kids that live in poverty going to fight because, you know, the army and the armed forces presents up the potential for some stability in their lives, mm-hmm. right? They can get some money, right? And take care of themselves to you know, providing, you know, that service in the armed forces. And, you know, and we're sending these poor kids to go overseas, black and white and brown. You know, mm-hmm. we're sending them overseas and telling them that, you know, the Vietnamese people are their enemy. And then they come home and we don't do anything for them. Right. Right. And, you know, they can't sit at the same table. They don't have the same access. They go back to their poverty. We don't care. And that was so much part of his poor people's campaign, right? Which was not just, you know, about black and white, but it was about socioeconomic justice, socioeconomic reform, mm-hmm. which, you know, as we know, was the conversations that actually created the legislation leading to EOC's existence. Right. So this is exactly the thing that we are here to do and what we're supposed to be doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree, you know, and it's sad to think about how long, you know, these injustices, these inequities have been going on, right? And, you know, we've talked about it in some of our retreats and understanding poverty. And, you know, you think that, you know, with all these programs in place and, you know, things like the GI Bill that we're really making a difference. But again, when you really look at the data, you know, not much has changed.
None. It really hasn't, you know, and I think, you know, to the point of just being able to apply the things that we see and do things differently. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a matter of, and you probably are going to be tired of hearing me say this word at some point, but being intentional.
Yeah.
You know, if the ways that Black and brown people were discriminated against when the GI Bill was formed was intentional.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we're going to, you know, create a paradigm shift, we're going to change the outcomes. That has to be intentional too.
Right.
If we're saying that, you know, 96% of homeless veterans are single males from poor and disadvantaged communities, then we understand that we need to make policy that specifically, you know, provides support for single male veterans from poor and disadvantaged communities. Mm-hmm. We know that, you know, and you know, then we have to create funding for that. And we have to, or rather we have to direct funding for that. You know, we have to take responsibility for the fact that we are creating poverty by sending people to war and not having anything for them to come back to.
Right.
You know, those are big conversations to have, but they need to start being had.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would be very, very concerned for the safety of our country, not from an international perspective, but from a domestic perspective. If we have a whole bunch of veterans who are suffering from PTSD,
mm-hmm.
who are trained to kill,
yeah,
who don't have access to mental health resources, and their growing population,
mm-hmm.
that's concerning, right? And again, this is, and it may be very clear, this isn't to vilify,
right?
It's not to vilify veterans, but it's of to course. Say. That's something that can happen. We, you know, not too long ago, there was a veteran in Dallas, right? Mm-hmm. Mass shooting in Dallas. It was a veteran
who did not have
access to mental health services, didn't have the access to resources that he needed. Right. And I think sometimes we need to look at that and remember that and think of that as like, hey, it's a warning.
Mm-hmm.
Warning. We need to be better for them. We need to work better for them. And we need to support them the way that they've supported us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree, you know, and like you said, I think it just starts with having these conversations, you know, so I'm glad that you brought up this idea of, you know, talking about veterans, and I know it's because it's Veterans Day, but like you said, it has to happen more than on just one day or 2 days of Memorial Day and Veterans Day. So I'm happy that you took the time to share this information with all of our listeners, especially to our EOC employees, right? Because like I said, it starts with us, and you know, we are the poverty fighters, and so what are we going to do moving forward? And so thank you again for taking your time. Is there anything else that you'd like to share before we end our podcast for today?
You know, I think that's it. I guess the one thing I would ask anybody listening is, what are you going to do for a veteran after Thursday?
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Just something to think about.
Definitely. Thank you again, Kevin. I appreciate it. Always a pleasure having you on. And I'm sure we'll do another one real soon. So I'm looking forward to the next one.
I better believe it.
All right. Take care, man. Talk to you soon. All
right. See you. Bye.
And there you have it, another episode of the Poverty Fighters Podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode. I had a great time chatting with Kevin. As always, please be sure to share this episode with your family and friends, and be on the lookout for future episodes. Thank you, and take care.